Hi, this is Kalyan Karmakar, and welcome to Foodocracy for Her. Foodocracy for Her is possibly India's longest running podcast series featuring the amazing work of women in the home chef segment, as well as in the food segment. And today we've got Reshma Mane, who's been in this since 2010, and with an enterprise called Every Aroma Caterers, which I've recently found out is now called Just Every Aroma. So we're going to sort of understand why it's Just Every Aroma and Reshma's story. So Reshma today is in joining us from Santa Cruz in Mumbai. I've been interviewing off late people from Bangalore, Delhi, and so on, but I thought it's good to come back to Mumbai. I'm in Bandra, she's at Santa Cruz, connected by Zoom. And lovely to see you, Reshma, and nice and bright and smiling. And welcome on board.
Thank you so much for having me, Kalyan, sir.
Absolute pleasure. Please don't call me sir, because then you know I will have to throw a chalk at the thing if you give some wrong answer. So you know, I'm always interested in names and you know how people you know look at their businesses and stuff like that. So tell me a bit about why Every Aroma, and then why did the caterers bit get knocked out? But first, why Every Aroma?
Yeah. So I started my journey in 2010. It was obviously a part of my plan. I had this plan of opening my own restaurant. And when I spoke to people who had food, worked in the food industry, they were like, you know, before you're just a beginner, before you get into that plunge of a restaurant, start something of your own, understand the market, you know, and then take that big step. That's how I started the home catering service. I said, let's start from home. Obviously, but through family and friends is what I began my business with. At that time, I was like master of all, right? I wanted to be a master of all.
And now you are? Now you are the master?
Kolhapuri, Kolhapuri, Kolhapuri.
Yeah, there's more to Kolhapur than chappals.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh. So that's how I said, okay, you know what, I don't want to stick to one cuisine. I don't want the name to specify and restrict me to only one cuisine. So let's have something which is more, you know, more versatile, more broad. So I can, even in future, if I want to change my cuisines, change things, I can. And that's how Every Aroma happened.
Ah, okay.
And yeah, I said, you know,
my
something...
blog is also, my blog is called Finely Chopped. And so which also then allows it to be everywhere. Like, you know, they were Bong Mom's cookbook and so on, which is Bengali focused.
Exactly.
But I can, yeah, that's I never thought of it. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's why Every Aroma. Huh?
Exactly.
And why aroma? Unless I'm becoming too pedantic, analyzing too much.
So it was not just my, I'm very bad at remembering names, I should tell you, and just coming up with creative
I'm Kalyan,
words.
In case you forgot it.
I won't forget that. And I said, you know what, I took my brother's help and from these few words, he said, okay, jot down names that you want, which you feel describe your food. And that's how I think Every Aroma, you know, came up. And he takes pride today. I am the one who gave you the name and you stuck onto the name.
so does he take royalty?
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, he is a big time foodie. I love him for that, because both of us hog like crazy idiots when we meet. So yeah. I mean, he gets all the goodies. He was in Pune. He's come back to Bombay now. So yeah, a lot of food goes to him. Tasters, I need people, right? I need samplings.
We're all there. Anyone who wants to be a sampler, please just write to Reshma. She's looking for samplers. Yes. So finally,
my father is tired. So yeah, I'm done eating. So I need people. Yeah. So that's how Every Aroma. So I started with Every Aroma Caterers because I said I'm doing home catering. That's where the caterers word was added. In recent times, obviously, since a year, I've started with deliveries again from home. And what happened was, what I realized from connecting with customers on social media is that they were very confused. They said, okay, you're a caterer. You know, do you do only party orders? Do you do only delivery for one person? Is that possible? So I said, you know what, if people are so confused, because some people just go back. Seeing caterers, they may just turn pages or they may go to another. So I saw the first thing was, my first view was, is does Instagram allow me to take out their name? You know what I mean? We are in that era of social media where you have to take social media's permission.
But that's true. That's true. Like even because if you suddenly change your name, your followers are following you for one name. I mean,
it's the availability, right, on Instagram.
Yes.
So that happened. And so everywhere, my branding also was Every Aroma. So I said, okay, let's just stick to that. And again, it leaves me a lot of space to do whatever I can, like workshops, delivery, catering. I can just keep on adding, to the profile. So, yeah.
No, I love stories of branding, and it was a fascinating story. In fact, my wife is the one who named Finely Chopped, or the book Traveling Belly. Though I must say, Foodocracy is, she named the Traveling Belly as well. Foodocracy, I must, and she also named the Home Chefies Awards, which you're part of. Foodocracy has come out from my head. And I must say that luckily, she does quite like the Foodocracy for her series. She looks forward to the interviews. But, it's fascinating to see the thinking at your end, because when you said it sort of made sense, because when I hear the word caterer, then the traditional notion of caterer is a slightly a business with hired cooks, a bit unskilled perhaps in the conventional sense, versus what you would expect from a home chef, so to speak, who would be like more home-like cooking and stuff. Right. So it's good, yeah. I mean, it's very interesting. Yeah. But Reshma, you were a good girl once upon a time who, listened to her parents like a good, Maharashtrian girl sort of prepared for service by finishing your school, college, and then you did an MBA. And then what happened? How did you become so businessman-like? I mean, that's for the Gujaratis and Sindhis. Why did you become such a disappointment to your Maharashtrian genes?
So I have to tell you, the business part of me is still coming up. I'm still learning. I'm still learning to be a good businesswoman. I mean, the passion for cooking takes over the business part. Even when I started with catering, it's like how your mother serves, right? Dil khol ke. that is the way I used to, even give out my catering orders. Delivery, in fact, to an extent, started off like that. But then, you figure out that even talking to people in the industry, you figure out that's not the way to go. You're doing it for some income, right? I mean, passion is one side, but earning something out of it also is important.
Planning is important because, apart from, of course, business and therefore making money, which is the main thing. The other thing is, when one is hosting people at home, one keeps, cow, cow, cow. But in reality, there's only so much which a person can eat. And professional cooks and caterers have those calculations. So it's good to know. Like, for example, if it's biryani for two people, should you put 1 kilo of rice? Or, it's good to have those measures, I feel.
Exactly. So even for me, it's been learning all these years, and then learning really doesn't need to stop, especially in food, keeping up with the trends, understanding, staying connected to people from the food industry. That's the way you learn. Okay, you've made mistakes. All of us make mistakes, but learning and improving is what keeps me really excited about my work as well.
So in fact, your story, from what I gather, did start with learning, right? Because you did your MBA, then did you do any job at all or get straight into food?
Yeah, so no, I didn't do any course. I mean, any small job in a hotel. I did a restaurant. I directly started. I did a small course at IHM, other catering college. It was a 3-month certificate course. I started with the cookery course because that is what I was very interested in. I used to do a lot of cooking classes. It was that era, that time of when cookery classes was a lot in trend.
The studios and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So
2008,
2009. Rushina had, then Pooja Dhingra, then quite a few of them, right?
Quite a few, and individuals coming up in buildings, and they were like, we're doing a cookery course, and
that's things,
and I started taking part. I started enrolling for those, And I met a lady somewhere, said, you know, you're so keen on cooking. Why don't you just go to IHM? They have this short course and they teach you a variety. And if, after that, you can take up a job in a restaurant if you want to. That makes you eligible, you know.
And these courses happen through the year? Like, do they happen in many batches?
So it happens twice a year for 3 months. And it's limited seats. So it's first come, first serve basis.
And so people have to keep a lookout on their website or whatever.
Yeah, they have to. It's just 35 seats, I think, that's available. In COVID times, I don't know what rules they've changed. But before that, I had another friend also who had enrolled for it and she loved it. She thanks me till day. She's like, I've made lovely friends and I've learned so much.
I have a friend, Gia Fernandez, who did the bakery course, you know, quite a few years back, you know, same time. I think she also really enjoyed the course and the friends she made. But I remember Gia telling me that it was more a slightly traditional, conventional basics of cooking sort of thing. Like, for example, in bakery, it was not so much about how to make things look pretty or plate or photograph versus the fundamentals of cooking. So how was your experience?
Absolutely. And we loved it every day. I'm not exaggerating. Every day we were kneading dough. And we had no machines. There were two of us on the table.
This is bakery.
This is bakery. Yeah. So I did the bakery course after the cookery course because we used to get this lovely smell from our neighbors during
lovely
cookery
aroma.
Course. And and we're like, we need that food. The puffs and, you know, the breads and all that coming out. We are like, oh my God, this, we need to try this. And every day we are kneading. And she used to give us the time to knead. But she's like, we are not going to the next step till you learn the basic you know, mechanism of kneading the dough, making the own lemon curd, everything by hand, whipping the cream. So that was fun because you really learn it the hard way and you always remember. These are things you'll never forget.
And the cooking course was also like that?
The cookery course, yes. The chopping, the cleaning of chicken, fish, everything that we had to do.
So you would debone and chop fish and everything. I call up Poonam at Car Market and say, you know, pomfret ko do piece karna, ya rohu ko peti aur gada alag se aur gada lamba, gol nahi hai. So nothing like you get it home and chop it.
Yeah. So even like sometimes, even in today's world, if I have my fish wala just giving me fish and he's like, mere paas time nahi tha kaatne ke liye. I was like, theek hai, de do. I still know what to do. Like, I know I'm cutting it the right way. And the basic is in place. So I wouldn't say I'm a professional, but at least the basic way of
Because it's a three-month course. But it's a three-month solid course. Huh?
Yes.
Each day they make it count. Wow.
Absolutely.
And what about all the variations like eggless baking and, you know, this, that and stuff?
It was a lot. It was, you know,
like you were saying that, you know, the newer things which people do now, like eggless baking or microwave baking, was it more suited towards that or was it more conventional?
No. So our faculty, I remember for the bakery course on the first day, she told us, if anyone wants eggless recipes, no one's getting it. And you can please walk out of the class right now. I am not sharing eggless substitutes at all. She's like, every recipe of mine has egg and you've got to use it. I'm not giving you an option or a substitute for that. And she said, secondly, she's like, right now, after you go back home, you've got to buy an OTG because I'm not teaching you microwave cooking. I'm not telling you how a cookie or a cake bakes in the microwave.
A pressure cooker?
Oh, no.
So basically what you're saying is that this is hardcore commercial. So like even the teachers are like, you know, were they the teachers from the course or were they freelancers, you know, coming in just for this course?
No, the same faculty that was teaching the five-year hotel management students, they were the same faculty. And that really made us feel good as well, you know, because we said we're getting the same professional faculties. They've also worked in kitchens and the same people are training us. So it felt really good. And it was lovely talking to them because they used to teach us so much. And it was fun. It was good fun.
And it would have, I'm guessing your fellow students also would have been interesting, right? Because when you're doing the five-year course, then you're largely still fresh out of school and you want to become, be in the hotel industry. But here there must have been people who have done various things in life perhaps and then come in, right?
Exactly. The eldest student that we had was a 60-year-old auntie.
Wow, what did she try to do?
She just wanted to come and learn. That's it. Nothing else. She wasn't going to get out and work in a kitchen or start something of her
own. She just wanted to learn. Do people still do that? Now it's so much about, goal orientation and things like that. I mean, just for the love. I mean, in my yoga class, for example, they just keep saying that do something just to learn, to expand yourself, enjoy. But we are always so, what will you get out of this sort of thing?
Yeah. Really. Yes. And so the thing was, with this course, no eligibility was needed. Hmm. You know, as I said, it was first come, first serve. You sign in. If you have the money to give it to them, just sign up and you're done. There are no questions asked. And
is it very expensive or
Not at all. For what they were teaching us, for the amount that they were teaching us, the fees was completely justified. So I think in 2010 or 9 or 10 I did this, it was around 20k, which was perfectly fine, because the variety and the recipes you get, I still have those recipes, those books, those spiral bound books are still torn a little, but it's there.
Photocopies and all that.
Huh? It's still there. The oil marks and grease, everything is on those books.
I remember sometimes we used to go and eat at those food festivals with the IHM students would do Scandinavian food festival, Japanese and all that. You'd buy tickets and... Yeah. Okay, so you did this 3-month course, fascinating, very different from your MBA and everything that you did before that. And then what were your plans when you sort of came out of that?
So after that, I said, okay, you know what? I don't have a cuisine. I just made up a menu. Menu was vast. So my menu was the 6-fold pages that we used to have that I used to open a big newspaper. That was my menu. That was the variety, because I was new in the market. You know, I didn't know how to really put myself out there. I said, okay, let me put everything that I can. The only way I have grown is through learning. Mistakes, a lot have been made, but it didn't stop me, you know, and I honestly feel it's the passion for food that has really kept me just going on, making the mistakes and learning and moving ahead. So I started with that.
Did mistakes sometimes happen on orders and projects?
Yeah.
and then your clients were okay with it or?
You lose those clients. You obviously apologize and, the money is returned and all of you do that. It's a part of our business. It's a part of the food business. I've lost some clients like that. But then again, it's a part of the business. You know, you can't hold on to every customer that you have. Apologize. I mean, that's the only way to move forward. So, yeah.
And how do you learn? Because you earlier also, you spoke about learning and keeping reinventing. So what are the sources that you look at for sort of learning new things? Is it people? Is it courses? Is it YouTube? How do you expand this?
What I've done is I've kept up with the trend in the market. You know, whatever is happening. As I said, there was an era of cookery classes. Then cupcakes came into market.
So you were doing cookery classes. You were conducting.
I started with that as well, because I was very keen on teaching. This was I know so much, let's teach little as well. And I started with workshops, cookery workshops, again, from my home. I did that. Then, cupcakes came into the market. I said, okay, let's start baking as well. So bakery came into picture. But then I said, it's not my forte. I didn't have the patience to decorate a cake. Fondant cakes came into market. I said, that's not my forte.
Do you feel that by saying that I'm not going to focus on that, you might have missed out on business opportunities? Like you could have maybe made more money if you'd done fondants and all, but still you took this decision?
See, that's where I said, for me, the business comes in later. My passion and my work, the love for food comes in first.
So it's interesting to know that because sometimes something else might be lucrative, but you might want to do something else. So it's interesting to see how people react in such situations.
Yeah. So, even for cakes, people said, do a course. You can do it. But I know my capacity. I know how much time I would even give it. Or it's like, you know, dil se khana nahi banayenge to wo achha nikalne hi nahi wala. It's like that. You know how many ever courses I would do, whatever I would do. Agar wo dil se nahi bana rahe cake, the cake wouldn't look pretty. I tried breads as well. I tried making breads. I'm still not good at it. I don't know for what reason my breads don't come out well. But so I'm not really, and why to keep the customer unhappy? Like I can't say, okay, I do so many varieties and I'm so many, I'm good at so many things. It's not about showing off. It's just about being true to yourself after a certain point.
You know, if I want to say this, that if you think of some of our favorite restaurants or places where we like to eat, you know, some of the places which we like to eat often are famous only for a few dishes, like especially street side joints and all. And if you look at some of our favorite restaurants, we probably go and order the same dishes again and again. It's not that, you know, the variety is that important. I mean, I give the example of Bukhara. Over so many years, it's been the same menu, but they keep winning awards. I mean, of course, they're a legend, but that's one way of working. Now, from what I understand, you, and this is a point which I also wanted to make to viewers, because, you know, since the pandemic hit us, you know, it's really been a lot about home chefs, and suddenly people have understood that there are home chefs who are, you know, operating out of home or on maybe like the ticket kitchen or something with small kitchen, whatever, cooking food and then, you know, retailing it, things like that. But it's not a new phenomenon. I mean, there were people, but in different formats. They were either doing pickles, masalas, papas, or like Reshma doing catering and stuff, because there was not that much of a delivery market. So now, you know, Reshma, when you were doing catering and all that from home, wasn't it a bit difficult to sort of, because, you know, manage large orders from home? So do you do everything as yourself? Do you have some help? Do you have to sort of remodel your kitchen? What about other people around you? How do you manage all of these things?
right. So I would say I'm fortunate.
Is it like Reshma's rules?
No, at this point, my you know, dabbas, the delivery dabbas, are in every part of the house. That's what I think every home chef's home is, right? Branding somewhere, dabbas somewhere, packet somewhere. So yeah, no, but I've been fortunate to have a good size kitchen, which gives me enough space, storage space. Even for catering, I take a maximum of 50, 60 people ka order. I'm not looking at catering a wedding of 100 people and all. I've always limited my catering to that because that's what I can manage. Like the max that I've done is 80 people catering. 80 also was, I mean, it was crazy, but
so you've not been tempted to take larger orders because you have the skill to do it and you'll make more money. You've not been.
No, for me, it's, I think the food would really take a beating in some way. You know, so I feel like if I can keep it to a smaller, something which I can really involve myself in the flavors a lot more. And in terms of help, I do have my house help. They are the best. Even right now, people have loved my chapatis and bhakris. And I thank her. I thank her like crazy because she's been doing it since years. In fact, she's with me since I was a kid. So, you know, it's like all experience.
And now she's your sous chef, huh?
Yeah.
So from being your nanny or something, she's now your sous chef.
Absolutely. Imagine. Like every morning she comes up and she tells me, Reshma, how are you making so much food? I said, I have no idea. I'm just making it and sending it out.
So who's the boss in the relationship? Is it you or is it her?
No. It's me. But when it comes to chapatis and bhakris, it's her. I don't know how, but my chapatis don't turn out good.
So I must tell you a story. You know, there was this while when I was working out of an office in Bandra East. Not BKC, but Bandra East, you know, the traditional area. And one day I went down and I came across this elderly gentleman who was selling poha and upma and chas. So I tried this poha and I quite liked it. And I would keep going there at around 11 o'clock or something for a mid-morning break. And then I got speaking to him. So it turned out that he used to be a sari salesman at Bandra Elco Market. And then as he was getting elderly, his sons said that, no, you can't go to work. So then, but he wanted to still say independent.
Okay.
So his wife would make this poha and upma, and then he would sell it. Then I wrote about it, and then Midday also did. Then from making one tapeli, she had to make 2-3 tapelis, which is
right.
Lovely. But the reason I'm telling you was that she and a few other ladies, and they must have been all in the 60s or whatever, were sort of a part of an NGO. Okay. Then the Tata Hotels had sort of given a contract. I mean, Taj okay. Hotels. So right. she and these ladies would go to Taj Land's End every day and, okay. and make rotis for the staff canteen because they have huge staff. So right. So she would then, make the, the poha and then go off there. But it's amazing to see like, organizations like Taj or you at your this thing, sort of acknowledging the skills which, women who work in our houses have or women have yeah. and otherwise and to utilize them and bring it out.
Really, okay. Very true. Yeah.
So since you were speaking of bhakris and all that, so I'm going to use that as a segue to get into the post-pandemic era or the pandemic era everyday aroma. So yeah. So the story so far, as I understand, is that you did the courses, then you started conducting cooking classes, then you saw trends in bakery, so you got into that, did cupcakes, realized not your cup of tea, moved into sort of cooking, but versatility, catering orders, looking at volume within yeah. a certain range and stuff. And then the pandemic hit us and right. then my first interaction with you was when there was a collab which you were doing with two other home chefs, one of which was Pallavi, our friend who lives down the lane, who will someday talk yeah. to me, but she says video is not her thing. But someday she'll talk to me. and then I realized that you're here and you're doing Maharashtrian food, specifically Kolhapuri food and right. food on individual orders. So very different from what you were doing earlier. So yeah. what happened? Why this change?
So as I said, when I started off, I was everywhere, right? I wasn't specifying or focusing on one cuisine. In the middle, this was around 2017, I started working for a food startup known as Authentic Cook.
Oh, yeah.
And they were
pretty yeah. good in terms of harnessing local talent and home chefs and all that.
And I have learned, like, even though I'm a born and brought up girl from Bombay, I didn't know Bombay had so many cuisines, I mean, the amount I have learned is all thanks to Authentic Cook. And over there, my main job was onboarding hosts. So the best part, like even when I was getting the job, they told me, you're going to get to eat because you are going for the tastings. I said, I'm in.
So is that how you know Pallavi? Because Pallavi used to also work with Authentic, do stuff, host meals for Authentic Cook. Oh, yeah.
Right. So, funnily, Pallavi's home was the first home I went to for tasting. I went with the founders to her place because the founders knew her. And
so then our road must have been familiar because a couple of days back, Reshma very kindly came and gave us some sambar powder from our house. So then it must have been familiar because it's just the next room.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So climbing those 3 floors, she doesn't have a lift. So we'll never forget climbing those 3 floors. So Pallavi, that's how I met her. That's how I met Mehroz as well. So
Mehroz was also with them?
The Bori yeah. host. Yeah, yeah. She was the Bori host in Warsaw. So I had been to her house as well for a tasting. So that's when on my 3 years with Authentic Cook is where I learned so much about Indian regional cuisine, and that was the time even when Indian regional cuisine was coming into focus. Restaurants yes. started focusing on that. They said,
let's Bombay Canteen.
We did, even Authentic Cook did some pop-ups at Indigo, or I don't remember the one at the Turf Club. I think they did 2-3 pop-ups there.
Neil.
Yeah. Right. So Bombay Vintage. So all this started Bombay happening, and people started understanding. Everybody was going back to roots. Everybody was focusing through traditional cooking methods, recipes, and. I guess around 2019 is when I decided to, go back to Every Aroma. And that's when I, you know, I left.
As in, go back to your own venture.
My own venture. I left Authentic Cook, and it all happened. I left them, and the lockdown happened. And what happened was, during those 3 months that it was strict lockdown, I was putting up posts of food every day, and people are like, how are you making all this food? Because we are
this limited. Food you were eating. There's a food you were eating.
Yeah, but fancy, right? I made it look fancy.
like what did you cook?
like I had made curry. It was curry chawal and cauliflower sabzi. Okay. I plated it in such a fancy way. People are like, this is what you're eating every day. But the way you presented it, I mean, I would eat
they
that.
Thought, so what? They thought Manish Mehrotra was cooking for you or something.
So people were like, you know, it doesn't seem like you are under lockdown. You have your ration sorted. I said, I'm a foodie. My kitchen is always stocked, you know, with various ingredients. I feel like cooking anytime, anything. I have to have my kitchen stocked. And that's how in the lockdown, people noticed that. When things started opening up, my friends and family said, you know, why don't you try delivery, you know, and let's start with that and try to focus on one thing. That's how, you know, the delivery started. And slowly, I saw other home chefs started seeing on Instagram people offering their own food, like ghar ka khana, because honestly, people were tired of eating their own ghar ka khana and people were looking at variety. So whatever was coming their way was a bonus for them.
Yeah, and restaurants and all were still sort of shut. And there was a lot of worry about hygiene and all of that then, exactly, because the clarity of how things transmitted. So at least if it was coming from someone's home, then that made a... But you know, that someone's home is also a thing. Then how do you sort of figure out that someone is a trustworthy person? So how did you build your brand? Because see, earlier you were dealing with catering, so few people, bulk orders, and suddenly you have to appeal to a larger number market, right, to get those sort of numbers. So how do you go about building your brand or awareness?
So see, as it started with Instagram, I have to say, I started obviously with Instagram. People who I had on my contact list, right, sabko message bhejo, like let people know that, you know, this is what you're offering. Obviously, it's a slow start. Even till today, people ask me 10 questions about hygiene, about how it's prepared, what's prepared, where prepared, and all of that. You've got to answer it because that's a genuine concern. But even after that, if they're apprehensive, leave it. It's perfectly fine. In today's world, you can't really say anything. It's perfectly okay. And so it started with Instagram, started with WhatsApping friends and family and everyone that you have on the contact list. And then it's only mouth. You know, because social media, Instagram, obviously, I mean, I was doing promotions over there as well. When I was putting up a post about what I'm offering over the weekends, I still have weekend specials. You know, like now I have an everyday menu, but now I have every weekend specials as well.
Was there a menu today?
So today, for this weekend, I have the collab happening with Pallavi and Mehros. And for Saturday, I'm planning. So I just traveled to Coorg and Mangalore last week. So I've gotten all my spices and everything, and I'm so excited.
So could we see some pandi curry or something, or something pandi, beyond that? That's very obvious, too obvious.
So I'm doing the Coorg mutton fry. And I'm going to be trying knee dosa tomorrow, my first time. So if the knee dosas come out well, that's going on the weekend menu. So I'm doing that. I'm doing Goan prawn curry with Goan rice. And my Kolhapuri is also there. It will pay a visit. So the Kolhapuri chicken fry with rasa and bhakri. So
okay, since you spoke about the collab thing, I was going to come to you this a bit later. But I want to ask you a bit about that. Because, you know, that's the first time I came across... you and two, like I said, one of the three partners in it. And I found it very interesting because, you know, in the food space and then we also, you know, sometimes chefs and all are friends, but everyone does their own thing. Even home chefs do their own thing and, you know, so on, own business and stuff. So what sort of inspired the three of you to get together? What do you feel is the advantage of a collab? Are there any disadvantages at the risk of getting sexist, like if there are three women and, you know, and headstrong. I don't know if people will stop watching that. You know, no disrespect, man. I find it very difficult if I'm not in charge to work. I'm not a very collab person. But but why collab? And so, who do you advise?
See, after a certain point, I felt stagnant in my customers, you know. Obviously I'm still being innovative in what I offer my customers, but it's always about increasing your customer base. This was one of the ways I thought I could increase my customer base, because I'm offering one cuisine. The same thing is happening with Pallavi. The same thing is happening with Mehrose. Yes. Your customers want variety, want something exciting. So even when I approached them, and I knew them before, I had stayed in touch with Pallavi and Mehrose, all thanks to my Authentic Cook days. So, you know, I said, these are the best two ladies I can start with. And they were more than happy to collab.
That's important, right? When you're collaborating or even putting a business together, that you should be in the same wavelength. Of course, you can disagree creatively and all that, but I think a certain amount of bonding required. I mean, otherwise it's fine. Then you can, you know, be in a job or be employed. But if you're together, I think that connect is very important.
Yeah, so that's what I even do. These are two ladies I've collaborated with. I did a collab with Ayo Patro as well.
Their food is also very interesting, right?
Their food is like amazing.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Yeah. I did one with them. I've got very pally with the Goan Poi with Aaron as well. Yeah, so Aaron hopefully the guy, also, yeah. He is busy. So hopefully I get time.
So Aaron has an aunt. So, you know, you need to be friends with her. And then she will then convince him to sort of cook for you. That's how I got it. Because we only are busy for the next 2 months. So then, hello, aunt.
Yeah, and that's how the busy the man is.
But good.
Absolutely good. So even when I do collabs, even in, like, I'm in talks with 2-3 other people right now. You connect with them first through Instagram, understand about food, about where they are, and talk about general things. Understand if you can really do a collab. Because at the end of it, you don't want the collaboration not to be fun. Because it's got to be fun for both of you. Whether it's food-wise or money-wise.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I feel otherwise. As well. Yeah. I so agree with you.
Yeah. So I create that bond. We have a chat. And, you know, if they are fine with the idea, we go ahead with it.
And this way, then it's entirely your own, as in, like, the three of you. Like, sometimes, like, say, an external sort of thing comes and puts people together and stuff. What also impressed me about the two collab meals where you've been a part of, or maybe planned, and this thing was the, it's pouring outside.
It is, not yet.
Yeah, it's raining heavily in Calcutta, so I'm a bit worried about my grandma. And we have a cat down the lane who's a bit injured, so I'm worried about him and his raining cats and dogs. Anyway, focus on food. What was I saying? Collabs. What was I saying?
Yeah. Collabs. About external...
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I was saying the thing which really impressed me was that the packaging, like, you know the way the things were put together, the containers, the expression note, I think there's some little flowers as well and all that.
Right.
So who did that? I mean, who is responsible for the design? Or was it a collab, joint effort?
Yeah, all the creatives, I'm posting about myself here, but all the creatives are always my job, because the other two call themselves technically challenged.
No, I know, like, Pallavi, great person, lovely person, lovely Malwani food. I've been wanting to interview her for various things over the last year or so. She said, I'll tell you whatever you want, but I'm not going to come on front of video, but I'm sure she will want to. Maybe after seeing this.
Yeah. So the best part about these collabs is, like, even for the pictures, right? We have to do a tasting. We have to see if everything gels well, and automatically the pictures.
Also the coordination, right? Because all the food is coming at one go. So it has to come to one place. Yeah. A lot of logistics.
Right.
It's hard work.
So we've always taken turns, you know. So at one point it's my house. Sometimes it's Pallavi's house.
So everyone cooks there. Everyone food.
We get our dabbas. So in the morning, we all get our dabbas from our place. The food is packaged at our own homes. But we all assemble at one person's house and create the boxes and then send it out from there. That's what we do. So it's easy work. See, as I said, the bonding is very, very important. That understanding and saying, okay, you know what, chalta hai, theek hai, come to my house. Okay, you know, house. That has to happen hassle-free. It has to come out very easy. And these ladies have been brilliant. And even with every collab that I've done with IO, the ones that I'm going to be doing, it's been very easy with them. So for me, you know, creating that ground of, you know, cordial relation before I talk about collab is very important.
Okay, I want to ask you one more thing about collab, because, you know, that's something which people are increasingly doing, like different creative people coming together to do stuff. And I mean, so one is the creative aspect of it, like you said, that, you know, that people should gel together, clarity in terms of what works, what doesn't, menu planning. And what are the things which one needs to keep in mind from, say, the finances point of view, or the transparency of payments, or the pricing? So, I mean, what is your general observation?
So,
because people can learn from that.
Right. So what we have in mind is we know how much our meal box should be priced at, because we know our customer base. We know our customers very well. For example, we know our customers won't be paying 2,000 a box. So, you know, putting up those kind of dishes doesn't make sense for us. So the first thing is, like, even at least for the regional connect, we have figured what works, what price range works for our customers. So the three of us decide, okay, this is the date that we want to do our collab in. The three of us put in our menus with the prices mentioned.
What fits in, yeah.
And it's a permutation combination, you know, of price-wise, what fits in the budget, what doesn't go above budget. Stick to that. And again, look at the variety also that you're offering to your
customers. So a lot of communication between you and whoever you're collaborating with. Yeah, that's what I've also felt, that when you're sort of connected, working with someone, I mean, that's very important to keep the communication lines going. So that's
absolutely. Yeah. So I'm just sorry. So I'm doing a collab with a friend who runs an Italian kitchen. So it's a very interesting, it's going to be a fusion menu that we
penne?
Have.
Kolhapuri mutton penne or
not penne. We've got spaghetti, we've got pizza, we've got risotto mostly happening as well. But again, I know this friend of mine through years, and you know, he said, you know what, it sounds interesting, let's give it a try. So even as you said about the pricing, about the menu creation, it's very easy because we both understand where we come from. He has a different, very different market, I have a different market. But then it's again easy when the understanding is there.
And plus your IHM background, because you've done, you know, baking, you've done the cookery course, and so much of the thing in places like IHM is about, you know, fundamentals come from European cooking. So in a way, you're actually someone who understands European cooking versus someone who's completely into regional who doesn't understand. So I would assume that. Okay, now the one more question which I wanted to ask you, especially for people who are making transitions, see that even though you made a shift within your thing, which is catering to becoming a home chef and stuff like that, but still the rules of the game changed, right? Because earlier, you would be looking at orders of anything between 20 to 60. Therefore, like, you know, a certain amount of effort in one job, but one client to handle. And, and therefore, a certain amount of payment to come from that client. So say a payment of maybe a 50 or whatever be the unit or something like that. But when you're moving into a home chef sort of thing, then for the same order, and so one client, you might have 12 or 20 clients to look after, and instead of a unit of 50, it might go down to, you know, two or one or this thing, and then, you know, or three. So how was it sort of adjusting to that, because suddenly realizing that okay, there's not one guy to manage and therefore so much to get, but so many people for so little things, was it easy to accept?
It is difficult in terms of money-wise, you know, food process-wise, delivery-wise, in every way, you know, catering to one person.
I'm saying in mentality, I'm just trying to, because, you know, I moved from, you know, being in salaried employee to a freelancer. And then when you're used to like one salary transfer or check being of a certain amount versus you know, so many jobs. It takes a bit of, and a lot of, and the reason why I'm asking this is that a lot of people are going through this and will be going through this in the changing world and hybrid models and all that. So I'm trying to see that what we can learn from you.
Yeah, so it is quite different, because even when I was doing catering, you know, your monthly, like you get 5 orders in a month or 10 orders in a month, and you are, you know, you're pretty well settled for the month as well. For home delivery, every weekend is a different ball game altogether. Like there's some weekends, I'll be very honest, I have very little work, you know, and on some it's crazy. It's really, I mean, you fall on the bed after that 12 o'clock delivery is done. You know, it's that crazy. Now that is something which comes, that this risk is something which comes with this form of business, the delivery business. We again, even in today's world, you talk to any home chef, everybody wants at least a party order, 2 or 3 party orders in a month, because you know you're sorted that
way. Yeah.
It still
it's
makes
like in
sense.
Cricket. In cricket, you know, one days and all that, you needed to hit that 1-4 or a 1-6 in an over, and then, you know, 2020 is different. It is 6 in every ball, but
right. And honestly, making the party orders is much more easier. Like it's like one dappa going out together rather than making 20 dappas on that table. It's from a working point of view also, it's much more better and easier. So yeah, I mean, it's okay. The transition is there, but at the end of it, every
but do you enjoy it? Because see, you've had to do it also because of the changing circumstance.
Yeah.
Which was not in your control of the pandemic. But having done it, do you regret it? Do you wish things were the way it was? Or are you enjoying it?
I'm enjoying it. As I said, at the end of it, it's food. I mean, in any way that it goes out, in any form that it goes out. See, again, it's going to be, hopefully it opens new opportunities for me. Yes. You know, I'm doing these collabs in some or the other way. I may do another collab with someone very interesting. So I never, it's like never say no, because something may open a very interesting door for you. You know, so even when I was doing catering over the last few years, I used to host travelers, tourists and travelers at my home as well, because I love meeting people from different nationalities, from different countries. I signed up on Airbnb online experiences as well. I hosted guests over there. I'm doing online workshops now, because I don't know which window or which door may open an exciting opportunity for me. As long as it's food, I want to be there. So yeah.
Don't we all. And you know, that brings me to the last question which I wanted to ask, which is a bit fundamental. But you know, since you're talking about opening windows and you know, hosting people and stuff like that, you've now gotten a renewed focus on the food of what we say in India, my your native land, so to speak, Kolhapur. Though you're a Mumbai girl, you're probably born also over here, right?
Yeah, you're born and brought up in Bombay.
Yeah. In fact, not even Bombay. Are we allowed to say that? I don't know. Okay, I'll stick to Mumbai. Okay, Mumbai girl.
Okay.
Santa Cruz girl at that.
Right.
But their roots are in Kolhapur. So there aren't too many people that I'm aware of who are doing Kolhapuri food in Mumbai. I mean, every restaurant has a Kolhapuri mutton, which I don't know if anyone in Kolhapur will recognize. But there was Kolhapur, Purepur Kolhapur earlier. I've also been trying the food from MH09 Shetkari in Thane.
Right.
And I believe they're there in Kolhapur. I've had some of the food at home. It's pretty amazing. So tell us all, tell our audience, you know, other people in Bombay, Maharashtra, India, across the world who are watching. Tell us a bit about Kolhapur and the food of Kolhapur. I mean, all that people know, if they know, is mutton and very spicy. So tell us a bit about Kolhapur food.
You know what? That is the misconception that people have about Kolhapuri food. Like, I've had so many customers telling me, "Acha Kolhapuri hai, it's going to be too spicy."
In fact, your food, which I've tried, is not spicy. I don't know if you've toned it down.
No. So I started off, you know, when I started delivery, I used to make it spicy, but I've eaten food at Kolhapur, obviously. I mean, every visit to Kolhapur is only about the thali, right? I mean, morning, evening, you're eating only mutton thali over there and the rasa. So It is not crazy spicy. If you talk about crazy spicy, Saoji lies there. You know, Saoji is where you cry. You literally have running, you have a running nose. That is called spicy. Kolhapuri has the color for sure, but that doesn't mean it's so spicy that you can't digest it. Plus, yes, I have toned down the spice a little because the Mumbai crowd can't take that much spice, you know, and we are not, because it's obviously the place that we stay in, our digestive systems are pretty slow. Plus it's mutton or chicken that you're giving me, which is already high on heat, right? So I've toned it down a little, but the flavor is still there. You know, maybe I've like half a spoon of red chili powder is less, but that's it.
So tell us about some of the famous Kolhapuri dishes. First of all, does Kolhapuri mutton exist? Like if I go to Kolhapur, will I get a Kolhapuri mutton or will they just say it's mutton?
No, it's mutton.
It's like Bombay bhel, which you get in Calcutta. Over here it's bhel. But tell us a few, like, you know, there's a pandara rasa, the tambara rasa, which is so, interesting. So, do they eat any vegetables at all? I mean, where do they get their fiber from? I mean, oh, that's God. A Bengali in me thinking, is everyone constipated in Kolhapur?
Yeah. The vegetarian food is all about fibers because you've got your pulses there, you know, your usal, you've got matki, you've got all kind of pulses ka usal happening. Zunka, obviously, zunka bhakri is such a classic combo. You have your green vegetables, a lot of methi, a lot of dil, shepu is used, and it's simple preparation. You know, highlight the vegetable, let the main ingredient be the main vegetable. It's just, sometimes it's just lassan and mirchi ka
garlic only. And chili.
It's only that. And wow.
That almost sounds Italian. That almost, you're collaborating with an Italian. I mean, they use just oil and maybe very basic sort of...
I'm not joking. That is what the food, that's the food my father eats. He's been brought up with that food. So he's like, I just want simple flavors and that is my ghar ka khana, you know.
And is mutton consumed like every day? Because like, you know, in other parts of India, often it's more a Sunday thing or something like that. So is goat meat like more than that? More frequent than that?
No. So mutton obviously has its occasions, but it's not an everyday thing. People still have their bhakri and their the bhaji and chapati.
What's the difference? Someone asked me once, and if I was to explain to people, the difference between bhakri and chapati is bhakri like hand patted?
Bhakri, yes, that is one. It's you don't use a belan.
You don't use bhakri. A roller and pin. Yeah.
You don't use a rolling pin for that. And the atta is different because bhakri, you get jawar, bajra, rice.
Millets, rice.
You get different kind of bhakris. Chapati again is only mostly wheat, and now people have started adding different flours as well, but it's basically wheat flour that you use. It's also much thinner. Chapati is much thinner compared to a bhakri. So even in bhakris, what we prepare is a thicker version. If I've gone a little to the Konkan side, they have bigger bhakris, much bigger in size, but thinner, you know.
And what about vade? Vade?
Lot of?
Vada.
Like Right.
The puris, are they made in Kolhapur also?
So, not so much as bhakris. Like, I remember when I used to go to my father's village, my grandmother used to make only bhakri. She used to make this anda ka rasa. It's only water with tikkat masala and anda and lots of coriander.
So, saying only water. You're using Maharashtra food without coconut, without peanuts, without fish. This is no Maharashtrian food which you've heard of.
Yeah, so no. So the food at least that I have grown up eating, very less on peanuts.
Hey, less on coconuts and peanuts.
Less on coconut and peanuts. Yeah.
Because Kolhapur is also like more a landlocked area, right? It's not a coastal thing.
Yeah. So even today, my bharleli vanga is the only dish where I'm putting in peanuts. There's nothing else which has peanuts. And obviously my Kolhapuri mutton or chicken has the dry coconut going in, right? But I'm traditionally the way it's prepared and what I've been taught growing up is completely different. because so the flavor that I enjoy is what I'm cooking. I've made up your, you know, changes here and there because people say, okay, traditionally ye dalna hi hai. So I've done that. But
this is Reshma's food. This is, yes, Reshma's food. Reshma is a Kolhapuri who's born in Mumbai and, you know, is a woman of 2021. This is her food. I mean, it might be very different from, like, you know, I mean, I find that in Bengali cooking also, I mean, there are differences in terms of, say, maybe the amount of mustard oil, which one might like, or, you know, different flavorings and stuff. And how do people react when they get to try Kolhapuri food? Do they find it to be very different from anything they've tried before when they try your food?
So, yeah, I mean, initially when I started, the first thing that people used to say, ki, acha, ye, this taste, we've not got what we got when you were in Kolhapur. Like, Opal is a very famous restaurant in Kolhapur.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
And we don't like to Opal anymore. It has,
it's like the Kareems and all of that. I mean, Britannia.
Right.
You know,
right. Yeah. And people, see, it was a very natural thing for people to compare your food to restaurant food when you started off. And they said, okay, this is not the flavor that we've gone there. I said, but that unfortunately is the difference between restaurant quality and what you prepare at home. There
That's
will always be a little
point.
Difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I said, this is the way I cook at home with my masalas. And these are the flavors. So people have enjoyed it. Some have found it too spicy. Some have really enjoyed it. It's always a mixed bag. So, yeah.
So what next, Reshma? What next for you? Which aroma are you chasing next, creating next? Or is it going to be this for a while? Do you have any plans, visions?
So it's obviously the same kitchen. I plan to do it from my own kitchen. I'm looking at many more interesting collabs because I think that will open a lot more interesting avenues for me. You know, as a cook, as someone who loves food, it'll be very interesting to work with different people and take Kolhapuri food itself in different forms, in different ways. And that is what I'm looking at. And obviously trying to get more orders. So obviously, yes, with the festive season coming up, work on a party menu and, you know, it's again cuisine-wise, put Kolhapuri food over there in different forms.
Wow. And such an amazing journey, you know, it's just been maybe like 10, 11 years.
Yeah.
But so power-packed and so eventful and so many things. And I think that there's a lot to learn from your journey for people who are planning to do different elements of what you did. But lovely chatting with you, ladies and gentlemen. That's Reshma Mane. And her business is called Every Aroma. She's a home chef for Mumbai and delivers all across Mumbai. And you can find her on Instagram as Every Aroma. So it's pretty easy, Every and Aroma. And go there, and she has interesting menus there, collabs there and stuff like that. You can place orders with her or for yourself, or even if you're anywhere in the world, you can place orders for loved ones and you know, help this movement grow. So all the best. Reshma, I must say that your smile and your passion for food is infectious. And I'm sure that whatever's coming up next out of your kitchen is going to sort of show that as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's lovely talking to you, Kalyan.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. In my circle. You have to sort of get professorial. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Take care. Bye. Bye.